Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Bike racing is coming home. Spring is in the air, and with it the hint of frying hot dogs and Belgian beer. It's classic season again. This is a quiet residential street in the Belgian town of Koen, just a few miles from the border with France. For one day a year, it's invaded by the Pro Tour Circus for Koen-Brussel-Koen, part of the Classics opening weekend, along with yesterday's Omloop Het Nieuwsblad. Everybody loves racing bikes in Belgium, and on this edition I talked to rising British talent Fred Wright of Bahrain McLaren, 20 years old and already acquitting himself well in his first season with the pros, and the experienced local-born rider Jans Kukkelier of EF Pro Cycling on what it takes to tame the cobbles. Disappointingly, it mainly seems to involve being born in Flanders. And the South London slackers behind the Deserter blog on their trip to the Festival of Belgianness, the cyclocross at Cockshader. This is the Ruler podcast, supported by Lacquer, bicycle insurance powered by the community. So Fred Wright of Bahrain McLaren, you're about to start Koen-Brussels-Koen. Yesterday you did Omloop Het Nieuwsblad. It's a bit of a busy old weekend for you, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's probably the busiest weekend of racing I've ever had. 400k in 2 days. I mean, there's nothing like starting another race day having done probably the hardest race of your life.
What was yesterday like? Just watching it on the TV, it looked hard enough.
Yeah, it was brutal. Yeah. I don't think the TV even does it justice, to be honest. There's nothing easier than that with that kind of weather, but no, I still absolutely loved it, you know. Being in Belgium.
Well, you've raced in Belgium a lot, you know, as a junior and in the past, but what's the difference? How much of a step up has it been this year coming to the Pro Tour?
I think it's just, especially for these races, it's just every single section, every corner, every point where there could be some action, like with some crosswind or a cobble sector or a narrow road, it's a fight for each of those points, which I've never experienced before, and that really takes a toll on your body, that's for sure.
And what's your job in the team for these races then? What, do you have a specific target for each race?
It will just be full support for the guys. I think what's good is I learned a bit yesterday, and hopefully I'll be able to do a better job today, and so I know what got the plan, and just got to stick to it.
This is your first season with Bahrain McLaren, your first season with a Pro Tour team. Presumably, beyond this, you have your own ambitions, do you? I mean, at some point you'd be wanting to win rather than just supporting other riders.
Yeah, I think that's what's great is I can come to these races, and just the most important thing with these Belgian races, which are the races that suit me, is knowing the course. And I've already did some recces in the week with one of the guys from the team, and there's so much to learn and so many different points. Like, you got to know, oh, look, there's this house on the right, or this is the big brewery where this happens, or whatever. So you got, especially with the course like yesterday, where you're going on the same road multiple times, you're going to the same cobble section, you need to just know. You got to know what's coming before, so you can get in the right place before.
Well, you're about to get on your bike. What's your target for today? What's your job for today?
Just got to put the guys in the right place before the Claremont.
And that's where it's going to be decided.
Yeah,
it?
I mean, who knows? I mean, as you saw yesterday, it kicked off a lot earlier than I think than we originally expected. But yeah, we just keep everyone in the right place and stay up there, and hopefully we'll come away with the result.
So you're off to your bike now. Good luck.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Cheers. Well, while Fred Wright is learning the ropes of one-day racing on the Pro Tour, Jans Kukkelier can look back at a respectable 10 years of riding at the highest level and a lifetime spent riding the roads round here. I spoke to the EF Pro cycling rider the night before, Het Nieuwsblad, and he told me he'd come to bike racing relatively late.
I'm not raised in a real cycling family. My dad, he always had a race bike. And growing up, we always went to the Alps on holidays to watch one of the stages of the Tour de France. And my dad would bring his bike, and then maybe a friend would bring their bikes as well, and they went for a couple of rides. But it wasn't really a cycling family. Like, that was probably the only time the bike got used. And I actually started a little bit late. I started racing as a junior and riding the bike a little bit before that. But I remember, like, probably one of the first proper rides we did, we came here to the parcours of Flanders and Omloop, just to see how those hills are like. So that was one of my first experiences on a bike.
So you're used to them, you're used to the cobbles, you're used to the wind, you're used to the rain, which looks like we're getting quite a lot of this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. I think with the cobbles, so I grew up in Bruges. The old center is full of cobbles. I don't think there's a lot of like normal paved roads. And it might be a stupid thing, but I actually think that helped me like understanding a little bit how to ride a cobbles, because I had to go to school every day on the bike. And I think in a way you learn it a little bit. You learn to read the cobbles and know where to ride and where not to ride. Because I can imagine somebody coming to Europe and doing the cobble races the first time. They have absolutely no idea where to ride and where not to ride. I think growing up, it's probably the best learning school. You just go to school on your normal bike every day on the cobbles, and you'll know, okay, that's a bad section, that's a good section.
What's the secret then?
I don't think there's a lot of secrets. I think doing it a lot helps, because you learn to read the cobbles. But I think the most important thing these days is just the material, the bikes, the tires, the wheels. I think that's also why, compared to other races, we do so much testing and recons, because the smallest change can make a huge difference. I think, every team does it. If you don't, you have a big disadvantage.
The weather today and the forecast for the weekend is pretty grim for both races. But you were out riding yesterday. It was even worse, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it'll probably be the nicest pictures we'll have the whole year. But actually, it wasn't too bad, because I think we knew it was really bad. Like, we were driving in the bus to the starting point, and it was snowing. Like, actually the worst conditions to ride in, because when it gets a little bit colder, then it's proper snow, and then you don't really get wet. But this was, like, it was still wet and ice cold. And in the bus, yeah, you just saw everybody just put on everything he had. And nobody got cold yesterday. We did it smart. We didn't, like, stop every 10 minutes to get a jacket on and off. And guys that want to go harder or slow, we made it like a proper recon, and we only stopped once or twice to do, like, some small adjustments. And it was actually good. Like, the last 30 minutes it dried up, and I think if we would have said we go a little bit longer, it would have been okay for everybody. But the conditions were really bad yesterday. I think for sure, if it was only me, I can't even remember the last time that I went out for a ride in this weather condition. But I think it was good we did it yesterday. We got a lot out of it, especially with the tires and the wheels, because I think I'm new in the team, but there's always some new changes. I think it's always interesting to try out the bikes and the wheels and the tires on the cobbles. Yeah, it was a good recon yesterday.
Are you one of those Flandrian riders who gets up, looks out the window, and if it's pouring with rain and wind and it looks really miserable, you think, yeah, that's my sort of day?
No, not at all. But I have to say, I don't get worse. I think I handle all weather conditions pretty well. If it's super warm, like, I'm not going to perform better, but I'm not going to get a lot worse. Like, you have some riders that really don't perform when it's really warm. And I have the same with the cold. If I can choose, I would prefer just 20 degrees and dry. But I don't think, like, I don't think I get a lot worse when the weather's bad. I think it's the same for almost everybody. You don't have that, like, really explosive acceleration, but I think nobody has. I think the key is just to stay warm as long as possible.
You just said that this is your first season with EF Pro. EF Pro Cycling. It's a team that does things in different ways, isn't it? It's not a kind of standard pro cycling team. How are you fitting in?
I feel very well. I came from Mitchelton to Lotto Soudal 2 years ago, and then from Lotto Soudal to here, actually, it feels a lot like what I was used to in Mitchelton. The team is a lot more international, especially when you look at the staff. And it feels similar as well. Of course, there are some differences, but I feel really good in the team. Like, I remember going from Mitchelton to Lotto. It was a Belgian team. You know a lot of people already in that team because they're all from the same country, and it's easy to fit in. So I didn't struggle changing teams back then. I was curious how that was going to go now, but it actually went super smooth as well. I think it helps as well that I've been pro cyclist for 10 years, so you get to know riders. I already knew some riders when I came here, and that made it easier, but I felt very welcome in this team, and I think up to this point all has been going really well.
At the moment, at the time we're recording this interview, we don't know what's going to happen with the Italian races, with the virus that's causing so many problems. But presumably your big focus is on the other Belgian races later this month and the rest of spring, I guess.
Yeah, we don't really know what's going to happen now. The only thing I do know is that everybody in the team and the race organizers, they do everything what has been advised from the World Health Organization. It's all being followed up, I think, as good as possible. And, of course, you think about it because this is an important period, but there's actually not much we can do. We just wait and see what happens. And if we can race the next couple of weeks, then we can race, and if we can't, then that's how it's going to be.
Which races in particular are you looking forward to, assuming that they go ahead? Presumably again, you did very well there a few years ago. Then you came second to another local rider, Greg van Avermaet.
Yeah, it's always hard to choose. I think as you get older and ride these races more and more, you realize that it's actually a really short period in the whole racing calendar. And for me, it doesn't really matter. I really look forward to opening weekend. I also look forward to the coming classics. So, just this whole period, you feel that it's something special, especially for a rider that grew up here. Just this whole period I'm looking forward to.
And after the spring season, what's your role in the team from then on?
I think that'll be a little bit similar to actually the previous years. I think especially my time in Mitchelton, I developed myself as a rider and knowing what I was capable of, what I was not capable of. And I had a lot of, I think, a big role in just helping out in the stage races. Then mainly the first years we had a lot of sprinters there, helping in the lead out. I actually felt good in that role. But then later on the team switched a little bit into more of a GC team. So that changed my role as well, just helping out the GC riders. And I also felt good in that role. And I think here is going to be the same. I started the season in Two Down Under. And there I was last man in the lead outs for Christopher. And I felt good in that role. I think the team was happy with what I was doing there. So for the rest of the season, I see most of the races will be that. And then, stage races, you always have some opportunities, not a lot. but I think I can manage a big variety of parkours. So whenever the opportunity is there, I can go for like myself on certain stages.
And you're 31 now, 10 years as a pro rider. What do you think the future holds? What when you look at the rest of your career, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the biggest goal stays winning a one-day classic. And then, yeah, between now and Roubaix, let's say. But just continue the way I've been riding the last couple of years. I think I won a stage in the Vuelta. That was probably one of my biggest victories up until now. I came close a couple of times in the Tour. I think, yeah, winning stages in Grand Tours, that's always going to stay a goal. And then there's a lot of beautiful one-day races, not only this period, but in the rest of the season. Yeah, still a lot of goals, I think, personally, but also with the team. There's still a lot of things I want to go for.
You're listening to the Roulette podcast, supported by Lacquer, bicycle insurance powered by the community.
So I'm Toby Taupitz, the CEO and co-founder of Lacquer. We've been going for over 2 years by now, and we can confidently say that we are 25% cheaper than our competitors. So you save money with Lacquer, but getting a unique and much better experience. One thing we're really, really proud of is that we're doing all claims in-house. So when you file a claim with us, it doesn't go to a third-party administrator in the middle of nowhere. It sits with us, with our claims handlers, who are no insurance people, but are actual bike mechanics. Fairly unique, we believe, and that really gives us a unique take on the customer experience.
Well, among the joys of watching bike racing in Belgium are, of course, beer and chips. Two things. The Belgians, Flandrians especially, can make a reasonable claim for being among the best in the world at making. And that wasn't lost on my next two guests, Vince and Andy from the Deserter blog and podcast. They've written in the latest edition of Rouleur about their visit to the cyclocross at Kokshede. First of all, gentlemen, it's fair to say probably that you know more about beer and chips than you do about cycling. Would that be true?
Yes, more about beer and chips than probably anything.
So what was it that got you to go over to Kokshede and stand in the cold watching cyclocross?
I think initially for me it was the word Belgium when Ian rang up. He basically had us at Belgium, didn't he? And the idea that we could perhaps catch a sport new to us and then see our European cousins at play and make some very salient points about their enjoyment.
Ian did promise a massive Euro disco party, didn't he, by the side of the race, which did come to pass. So, yeah, it didn't disappoint. But, yeah, Belgium does have, yeah, the beer and the chips. And it's a really quite mad event, isn't it? I mean, cyclocross generally, but cyclocross on sand. Mm. Yeah, that's it's very tiring to watch.
Our first port of call was the beer marquee, and in which it was fair to say bedlam was taking place.
It is an extraordinary event. Almost all bike racing in Belgium is accompanied by the most extraordinary music as well,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah, we had it described to us as by Jeff, the photographer, as electro umpa, and that really summed it up for me. It's like songs you half knew, but they knew very well and were belting out at the top of their lungs. Very thuddy.
Yeah, with that very insistent beat. You know, I've never seen people having such a good time to bad music.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
What did you actually make of the racing? Did you see any of the racing,
yes,
first of all?
Yes, we saw all the racing. We saw the women's and the men's elite. We saw the women go through with the first five cyclists all being Dutch.
Yeah.
So that didn't go down so well with the home crowd. And then, of course, we saw Van der Poel, who was extraordinary, wasn't he?
Amazing. I mean, it was a walkover, but as we all agreed afterwards, as I think I said in the piece, actually, it's one of those walkovers that you just feel utterly privileged to have been at, you know, to have witnessed. He's obviously a great sportsman and you know, it was a brilliant sight.
Tell us a bit about Deserter, because it's difficult to define the blog and the podcast and the book, really, isn't it? But it is essentially, it's about the joys of South London, drinking, and not doing much else, really.
Yes, we're all about messing about, really. You know, nicking off from work early, getting to the pub in the afternoon. A bit like now, yes, yes. I'm afraid you've dragged us out of our normal day and got us to a pub on a, what day is it, Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, and we've got the good seats. That's what it's all about. Nick off early, get the good seats.
So on our travels, you know, there's a lot of pub crawls involved, and, we, you know, we write about more than just the beer, but about the experience of messing about, the history of the places, if there's some interest there.
Yeah, we refer to it as hidden learning. So you almost don't know you're getting a bit of a history lesson.
And it has an appeal much wider than South London, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, as I think we said, you know, messing about is universal. You know, everybody wants to slack off, don't they? I think, I'm sure they do. So, yeah, we hope it has an appeal out of London. It's just that London is the seat of our psychogeographic wanderings.
Because we're quite lazy and that's where we live. So, yes, we're mostly in South London. But you could be doing it anywhere, although I wouldn't advise it in the country. There's a lot more walking and you know, further distances between pubs, which is great for the endurance messerabouter.
Actually, it's one of the appeals of cyclocross, isn't it? Because you don't have to do that much walking around. Basically, the racing comes to you, doesn't it?
That's right, yeah. Just lap after lap after lap, and you're right by the beer tent. yes, we got to see all the action because we were right by the flyover in great view of one of the dunes, so we could see the cyclists dismounting and mounting again. I mean, I felt for them, but they seemed to enjoy it.
And we're actually in the Ivy House in Nunhead in South London, which is a pub which was effectively saved by the community because it was threatened, like so many other pubs, with closure. It's a sort of rare example of a British pub that, you know, is going against the odds, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it came within a whisker of being closed. It was previously known as the Newlands Tavern and famous for its music, and we've just walked through the music, the stage room, and we're sitting in what they call the refectory. So it's a multi-purpose pub which the community now owns and is used in many different ways almost every night of the week. It was the winner of our first ever Deserter World Cup of Pubs, and I think we came to deliver we awarded them a sticker. And when we came to deliver it, there was chess going on in one room, knitting going on in another, you know, and a folk band going on in another. It was quite remarkable. That was a Monday, wasn't it?
It was a Monday night in January. yeah, it wasn't folk. It was 78 records. People bring your own 78s and play it in the music room. And it's obviously, yeah, it's been bought by the community, but it's really being serviced by the community. You know, everyone's involved. And, yeah, it's, and so I believe it's the first community owned pub in the UK.
Is the beer as good as Belgium, though?
Well, it's certainly different. I mean, Belgian styles are very different from ours, aren't they? I mean, the beer is very good here.
Yeah.
We did try some lovely ones when we were in Belgium, though. You had a Chimay, didn't you?
I had a Chimay in the hotel, the Chimay Blue. I think, you know, it's only 9%. You know, I was feeling... I just needed a little perk up. Yeah, at the... perhaps disappointingly, at the cyclocross itself, there was only Jupiler on available, or at least that's all I could find in the mad throng.
But I think that's to stop, because in the past there has been some sort of alcohol-related fisticuffs at the cyclocross, isn't there? And throwing stuff at the riders, yes, and things like that. So they're probably not handing out strong stuff.
There were several people who'd clearly been there from the very beginning of the day and possibly hadn't even left the beer tent, because when they came out, they looked like they were from another world. They were blinking, some were shoeless, one was covered in mayonnaise. I mean, there's that guy wandering around, wasn't there, between races. Initially, I just thought he'd lost his friends, but I think he just had that confused look on his face for the whole day.
Yeah, I'm not sure he had any friends, but... Yeah. But there is also a craft beer scene in Belgium as well, as there is pretty much everywhere. I mean, we weren't very far from Ostend, were we, in Kokshada? They have some very good microbreweries there. North Sea is one of them, and I had one of their beers while we were there.
Do you have ambitious plans for Deserta?
No.
That is quite true. No,
we don't. I mean, we do. We had a book out last year, which has done very well, and they keep asking us to do another one, which we might get around to. And I think if we do, when we do, it'll be sort of perhaps burst out of South London a little bit and be a bit more general, perhaps a more of a guide to slacking and messing about, perhaps a little more universal.
Yeah, having said that, we're not that ambitious. I mean, I think it's just that we're more lazy, but we probably will get that second book done and also a TV treatment.
Yeah, our agency asked for a TV treatment last June. So we thought it's important to stay on brand and not deliver that for at least a year. And we're doing that very well so far.
Yes, very well. I mean, it's only got to be a couple of pages long.
Yeah.
But, you
if
know,
anyone out there would care to write it for us, you know, drop us a line.
Yeah.
Vince and Andy of The Deserter. And that's it from this podcast. There'll be a Ruler Long Reads podcast soon, and I'll be back with another podcast later in the month.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.